Phillips, Representative Martin, myself, Senator Sharp, Senator Parnell has arrived as I promised. And Senator Wilken was going to be here. He might be here later.
I know you want to get a hold of him, but I hope it's the same.
Senator Adams, I believe, is going to join us later also. I think we're on teleconference now. We have scheduled this meeting, and it's to discuss a draft legislation that's not been introduced. The purpose is to gather opinions from the department and from participants in the gaming industry in Alaska before we proceed any farther and actually introduce any legislation. The meeting will be limited to the proposals included in the draft legislation, principally the simplification of gaming accounting by basing the charitable share on gross receipts versus net proceeds. Other gaming issues will be left to be addressed by other legislation, if any, other committees, or other meetings. Testimony under agenda item 4 will be by sign-up, and I would ask anyone that hasn't signed up to sign up if they wish to testify. We do have a sign-up sheet here with about 10 people so far, plus the teleconference sites. Individual testimony time may be limited based on a number we have signed up. I would ask this time, probably 5, 6, 7 minutes ought to be for the first pass on anyone that wishes to testify, to allow the teleconference sites time to testify, as well as other people that's lower on the list. We have teleconference sites hooked up presently. We have Fairbanks, Kenai, Kodiak. Here comes some more. Juneau, and that's it. We don't have Barrow yet. They were going to sign up or come online. The percentages included in the draft legislation, which I'm sure everyone is keenly interested in, is for discussion purposes only, and obviously it'll be subject to change. The desire of this chairman and of the committee is that this legislation not change the flow of any dollars in the direction they're going to now, as far as charities, operators, and permit holders, and the state. We want to try to come up with percentages that that result in the same flow of money from the operation of gaming in the state of Alaska. We will be hearing an overview of the materials by my staff member, Tom Williams. That will be followed by presentation by the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue is represented today by Deborah Vogt, Deputy Commissioner, Dennis Poschardt, Charitable Gaming Division Director, and Larry Myers, Income and Excise Audit Division Director. Comments and recommendations regarding the proposed legislation will be limited today to those who are directly involved in charitable gaming, specifically the charities, multiple beneficiary permittees, and gaming operators, vendors, and full-tab distributors. When legislation is actually introduced at the beginning of next session, there will be ample opportunity for additional public comment as the legislation moves through the committee process through both the Senate and the House. The draft version that we have in front of us today is the H version. Up in the right-hand corner, you'll notice work draft, a bunch of numbers, OLS0859/H. H is the one we'll be looking at today. That's the latest version. Let's see, Homer is now on teleconference, I see. Any comments from committee members before we start this presentation? So with that, I think we'll go to the overview by Tom. Tom will go through basically a sponsor statement sectional analysis and other items that caused us to entertain the thought of introducing or coming up with draft legislation. I will say that this is fulfilling a promise by myself to the Commissioner of Revenue that with the budget cutting that I was chairman of the Department of Revenue with the budget cutting that we did to revenue, we had promised that we try to simplify the auditing procedures, their efforts required to audit gaming, as well as the efforts required by the operators and permittees and so forth. So that's the purpose of the proposed legislation. We're meeting here today for the first time to see, take recommendations, advice, and from everyone concerned with the industry. So with that, Tom, would you give us the background and so forth on the legislation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Williams, for the record. I'm Senate Finance Committee staff to Senator Sharp. As the Senator indicated, during the Department of Revenue's subcommittee budget overview for fiscal year 98, the subcommittee looked at various alternatives for coming up with some savings. One of those alternatives, which was ultimately adopted, was to consolidate the income and excise audit, the charitable gaming division into the income and excise audit division, where it had been back in the middle to late 80s, thereby realizing some savings. As part of that, we were looking at ways of streamlining the charitable gaming process so that not as many resources were needed to perform those functions, and so the resources that remained could be reallocated to some other functions. As the Senator indicated during this process, this concept came up, and the Commissioner expressed some interest in that and urged the committee to proceed on that in light of the consolidation of the budget cuts. In your packet, you should have a one-page sponsor statement, a sectional analysis of the draft, of course, the work draft, H version dated 6/20/97. Behind that sectional analysis, there are copies of the statutes that have either been repealed or repealed and reenacted, so that you can follow along on that. This legislation is intended to ensure that charity share of charitable gaming proceeds will be taken first off the top of every dollar played. The public will be assured that out of every dollar wager, a certain minimum portion will be going for charitable purposes. At the same time, it will substantially simplify the required accounting for the Department of Revenue, charities, and the operators of charities' permits. Finally, insofar as possible, this legislation is intended to maintain the status quo with respect to the relative amounts returned to the charities, the relative amount returned that the state collects in fees, and the relative amount available for the actual gaming operations. Current Alaska law bases the amount that a permittee or a permittee's license operators must generate for charitable purposes, bases that on adjusted gross gaming income. And that's basically gross receipts less prize payouts and taxes. In addition, the law describes what a charity or an operator can or cannot claim as an allowable operating expense when determining the net proceeds. And the net proceeds is the adjusted gross income less the allowable operating expenses. This requires the charities, their operators, and the state to all generate, review, and often audit a substantial amount of accounting data, specifically as relates to what's an allowable expense. For the entities involved in charitable gaming, this is time-consuming and can be expensive. This legislation would base the amount required to be dedicated for charitable purposes, and we call that in this legislation the charitable share, base that amount on gross gaming receipts. It would also base the state's fee on gross gaming receipts. Not only would reporting be substantially simplified, the need to audit allowable expenses would be eliminated. The Department of Revenue strongly supports the concept behind the legislation, and they're here to talk about some of those reasons. It will simplify the oversight and regulatory process, reducing the cost of processing gaming reports, More importantly, it will enable the department to expend more of its recently reduced charitable gaming budget on auditing and the investigation of gaming activities. With that, I would point you to the sectional analysis, and I can run down that briefly with you. The bill's an 11-page bill. And one of the things that I'd like to point out initially is that you see a rather lengthy title. And the lengthy title is because it's a tight title. This legislation was not envisioned to be a fix-all for all of charitable gaming's ills or perceived ills. It is intended simply to move to gross receipts and simplify this accounting. Therefore, we've drafted a very tight title so that it doesn't become a catch-all type bill. The most of what these sections deal with is substituting the term charitable share, which is the percentage of the gross receipts that goes to the charity and must be used for charitable purposes as defined currently under law. It replaces that term, it replaces net proceeds, which is the way we do that now. In Section 1, Section 1 repeals and reenacts the section of law that bases or that determines how much of a fee goes to the state, and it puts in a percentage so that it will generate approximately the same amount that's being generated now. Section 2 substitutes gross receipts for the references to the authorized expense, substitutes gross receipts for the references to authorized expenses and net proceeds, since that will no longer be necessary. And it also makes the authority to regulate the timing of the payment of charitable share currently implied in Section 11 absolutely explicit in subsection 2. And it expands the language to make it more clear as to who can hold a multiple beneficiary permit, otherwise referred to as an MBP. Section 3 and 4 simply substitute the charitable share language for net proceeds, as does Section 5. Section 6 updates a reference. Section 7 deletes the references to expenses and adds language that will explicitly prohibit a charity from paying any of the expenses of an operator. This will ensure that the charitable share is not directly or indirectly reduced. It's something that the department had recommended. Actually, before I go any further, I would like to comment that in the initial discussions, the department had a series of recommendations, and we narrowed them down to just those things that pertain to moving to gross, and those that were very very connected to that process. So there are some other things in here, but they're generally connected to the. Moving to gross. Section 9 repeals and reenacts the provision of law that requires certain portions of the proceeds to go to the charitable share, and defines the charitable share at a preliminary percentage of 2.5% of the gross receipts for bingo, 7% of the gross receipts for pull tabs, and 10% of the gross receipts for all other gaming activities, fishing derbies, raffles, whatever other gaming activities there are. Section 10 amends the statutes, adding reporting requirements for holders of multiple beneficiary permits that are consistent with the operator reporting requirements. It does not change when MVP holders are required to make distributions to their permits. Section 11 is the comparable portion to Section 9 as it relates to MVPs, saying in the percentages of what must be dedicated for the charitable share remains the same as for operators. Section 12, again, substitutes charitable share for net proceeds. Section 13, again, spells out the amount of the minimum charitable share. I would point out that while these are the minimum charitable shares, there's nothing that prohibits an operator or a permittee from dedicating more of the gross proceeds to the charitable uses. This is just the floor. And certainly those entities that operated their own games may well dedicate more to, if their expenses are low, may be able to dedicate more of those gross proceeds or gross receipts to charitable purposes. Section 14 and Section 15 substitute charitable share for net proceeds, and make the appropriate references so that the math works there in Section 15. Section 16 adds a new section to statute which authorizes operators to pool gross receipts, prizes, and door prizes by activity, and will simplify the accounting, but it will not adversely impact the amounts provided to the charities. And I will defer to the department to discuss, you know, what pooling actually does for the operators, why it's a good thing, not only for the operators and charities, but for the department, and simplifies their process. Section 17 and 18, substitute charitable share for net proceeds. Section 19 repeals and reenacts existing law to base gaming limitations on gross receipts rather than prize payouts, except for bingo. Bingo limitations will remain based on prizes, and this will add consistency and reduce the required accounting without abandoning a workable system for bingo. Section 20 substitutes the term ideal gross for ideal net, and reduces the percentage to a level that will return approximately the same amount to the permittee. The terms ideal gross and ideal nets deal with pull tab operations, when pull tabs are sold by vendors and the charity deals with the vendor. Simply moving it to the gross amount is what we're doing here. We're basing our percentages on gross as opposed to the ideal net. Section 22 redefines, Section 21 removes the ideal net provision and more clearly describes the vendor payment process. Works hand in hand with Section 21. Section 20. Section 22 redefines gross receipts to exclude local sales taxes collected, and otherwise clarifies the definition. Section 23 again amends the definition of ideal gross and ideal net, or substitutes ideal gross for ideal net. And Section 24 defines charitable share. Section 25 repeals three statutes or sections of statutes that pertain to authorized expenses and net proceeds. They're no longer necessary. And Section 26 allows the department to proceed with adopting regulations or getting their regulations noticed so that they can take effect at the same time and that the statutory changes are effective. And Section 27 and 28 statutes. As indicated before, the intended effects on the Department of Revenue are to simplify their operations and allow them to devote their resources to more pressing issues. The effect on the charities, the multiple beneficiary permittees, gaming operators, and the pool devs distributors, the intended effect is to basically hold the status quo. Now, as far as that's possible. The idea is not to redistribute the dollars that are generated from gaming. Other options. There has been gaming legislation. I believe it was Representative Martin's legislation that was heard in the House State Affairs Committee, and there were some other options that were discussed during that hearing. And some of those other options, or at least one of the other options that brought to my attention, was the idea of putting forth different percentages for different types of operators. That proposal has not been included in this, basically to keep the playing field level and not to protect certain types of operations. If everybody is paying off a certain gross, then they're free to make their own decisions as to which type of operation to run and the expenses to incur or not to incur as part of that operation. So it has not been, that has not been incorporated. Also in your packets, there is a copy of the Charitable Gaming Task Force, the Governor's Charitable Gaming Task Force. It's not the complete task force report. It is the basically the summary, the executive summary of the recommendations. And you'll note that several of the recommendations, although not all, have been addressed by this piece of legislation or this proposal. So it's, what is being proposed here is at least in part consistent with their recommendations, and I will defer to the department with any more information on that.
Any questions of staff or Senator Phillips?
On these recommendations, have they any of them been implemented since 95? The governor's task force and administration did not follow up, I assume, judging from the nods.
I'll have to defer that answer to the Department of Revenue.
I could address that. Senator Phillips, for the record, my name is Dennis Bouchard. I'm currently director of the Charitable Gaming Division. Yes, actually, the department took several steps in achieving some of the recommendations, and that was through the implementation of a whole new set of regulations that the task force helped to craft. However, there really have been very few statutory changes that have occurred. Yeah.
Sure.
Well, first, one thing that caught me off guard, because I don't want to in any way, shape, or form be considered one who protects the industry. I'm absolutely opposed to it. And I was surprised, Tom, that you mentioned a word, that we have some phraseology or some section that protects certain elements of the industry.
No, that has not been included in this legislation.
I know it has, but I don't want to protect any of them.
There were some proposals that were designed to set up different charitable, change the charitable share depending on the type of operation. And that sort of differential would, I suppose, recognize different costs and try to, and maybe my term of protection was not the best, but if you will allow me to use that term, to protect their interest at that.
Yeah.
Those with what the other proposals would have done, they have not been incorporated in this.
But that's not in the bill.
That is not in this legislation.
I mean, not to,
is
it in my bill?
I'll have to.
Okay.
I know it's just a proposal, and I don't know that it's been adopted. It has not been adopted in
okay.
This would set the percentages for all types of operations and not making a differential for any particular type of operation.
The other phrase I was wondering, you gave a little explanation on it, charitable share, and I don't think there's anything charitable at all about this. We just used them as a gimmick. It looks like that you're lowering the total amount, according to the last report that came out, that go to the committees. Whether they're charitable or nonprofit, a lot of them aren't charitable at all, you know, the nonprofit organizations. And have we lowered the amount here, or maybe Dennis can speak on that later, of the percentage going to the committees?
I'm not sure.
7% to pull tab doesn't seem.
Yeah, we might get into that.
Yeah, I thought we were lowering the numbers, and my gripe is that charities are getting very little out of this at all, Senator.
The as previously stated, it's intent that the percentage of the gross, less sales taxes, would return the same to charities as currently under the adjusted gross, or whatever the terminology is, after prizes and after some operating expenses, et cetera, et cetera. So that, we'll let the department speak to that, and then maybe questions after that.
So I assume you're just going to gross, which I understand, but since you did put down another percentage here, other gross, I thought that was lower than what we're receiving now. In the House bill, if we may talk about the work, we'll shoot for 30% and then let the operators knock it down from there. But 7% would be...
I think 30% is based on the adjusted gross after prizes right now, current law, isn't it?
We'll have to ask them. Yeah. It's not much. You might as well shut the industry down. If in the name of charity, you can just get 7%.
Senator Parnell, do you have any questions? The staff?
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, let's go on to Department. Deborah, I think you're first up, according to my agenda.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Budd. I'm Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue, and I thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee for providing the department this opportunity to testify on the bill. More importantly, I thank you for bringing this bill before the public and for the efforts you have undertaken to address some of the issues that we talked about last session and so on. I think it's a very important thing, and I'm glad that you're doing it. As you all know, and as Tom explained, the division's budget for charitable gaming was cut significantly last session. The division has been merged with the department, with the Income and Excise Division, and Dennis, who has been the director of the Charitable Gaming Division, will no longer be with the department after that merger. Larry Myers here is the director of the Income and Excise Audit Division. I'd like to publicly thank Dennis for his tremendous help in this area over the last couple of years, and we're going to miss him, and sorry that the division is no longer going to exist as an entity.
Let me interject by saying that's one reason we scheduled it for June, so we'd get the benefit of his testimony and
thank you for that,
so
yes.
I agree.
I guess from the commissioner's office, I'd like to say that it's a challenge to regulate the charitable gaming industry in Alaska, and it's always has been a challenge and will continue to be a challenge. The cuts, of course, make that challenge a little bit harder. The department does intend, though, to maintain a strong presence in the gaming industry, and we will leave to Larry the articulation of how that is going to bear fruit. Income and Excise, of course, has a lot of other duties, and charitable gaming is not likely to be at the top of its agenda. We are at the moment facing a couple of serious changes in the charitable gaming industry, and of course the one we've just talked about are the budget cuts that reduce our ability to look after the industry. Perhaps just as importantly, we are beginning to see some rather disturbing trends in the reports that are being filed with the department, and Dennis will elaborate on this subject. But we have had an opportunity to review the 1996 reports that were filed over the last couple of months, and noncompliance is increasing. The information that Dennis's presentation is based on is public information. We have not attached any names to, we haven't identified particular gaming operations by name in the presentation, not because it's not public, but because that's not the point. The point is to look at the industry and see what's happening in it, not to point any particular fingers. But you and Tom have both emphasized that the legislation you're proposing is intended to be revenue neutral, and I might add one qualification to that, and that is that to the extent that people are complying with the percentages that the legislature has established, it would certainly be the department's hope to maintain that status quo. To the extent that people are not complying with the current law, I hope the bill is not revenue neutral, and I hope it would end, would have the effect of bringing people more into the lines that the legislature has set out. This legislation would, I think, go a long ways toward solving some of the problems that we see in the industry. It won't go the whole way, and we've discussed with your staff and with you some issues that concern us that are not addressed in the legislation, but we certainly appreciate the steps that are being taken and are fully supportive of those steps, and we thank you for working on it.
Questions of Ms. Volk? Thank you. So, go on to Dennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've prepared a presentation for the committee today, so I'm going to push the button so the lights will come on. And I just want to say that I appreciate the chance to testify before this committee and share with you some of the data that we've compiled and to have a chance to talk a little bit about gaming and where it's been and where it's hopefully going. Get started here. I'd like to talk about and start off a little bit by talking about the gaming history and give you a little background of where gaming started and where we've been, and in order to give you a little bit better feel for what's going on. Let me check the focus here real quick and make sure that this is as good as it gets. First off, I'd like to say that the bar charts that you see represent the number of permits that are issued. It doesn't represent the amount of activity in dollars or anything. And the figures that are inside of the bars, that does represent the dollar amounts of gaming activity that occurred during each of those years. As you can see, when we started off in 1960, the gaming division, or there was no division at that time, I'm sorry, the gaming program, when gaming was legalized, we were within the Department of Revenue. The Department of Revenue was responsible under statutes at that time for being responsible for gaming. And there was about $600,000 of gross receipts in gaming activity in 1960. We'll jump forward to 1984, pull tabs were authorized by regulation. We issued 763 permits that year, and there was a gross receipts of approximately $41.6 million. In 1988, operators were legalized, and pull tabs were legalized by statute, and the prize limits on pull tabs were increased. That year, we issued 1,026 permits and had a gross receipts of about $87.5 million. In 1989, after the legalization of pull tabs and operators, it jumped. We issued 1,042 permits, and we had approximately $186 million in gross receipts for that pull tab activity. Also in 1989, gaming was transferred from Department of Revenue to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. In 1993, MVPs and vendors were authorized. The minimum payments to charities was increased
and gaming was elevated to division status within the Department of Revenue. That year we issued about 1,046 permits and had a gross of around $227 million. 1994, our regulations were enjoined. Activities that year were about $257 million, and we reached our high of 1,126 permits. For 1996, we issued 1,056 permits. We adopted new regulations, and we had a gross receipts of $270 million, or roughly, that's our estimate. 1997, for fiscal year 1998, the gaming division's budget was cut by one-third, and the division was transferred or eliminated, and the program was transferred to Income and Excise Audit Division. And the next slide shows a little bit, compares the budget activity from, or the budget for the division and the activity that's occurred since 1990 to present. The first bar chart represents the gross receipts from gaming. In 1995, which was the last year that we have final figures for, that was approximately $270 million in gross receipts. 1996 and 97 are estimates. The second chart represents the net proceeds, or the amount of money that actually goes to the charities. 1995, that was $22.3 million, and 96 and 97 are obviously estimates. Our third bar chart is the division's budget. It reached a high in fiscal year 1994 of just over $1 million. And just recently in fiscal year 98, we were cut to, or the gaming program was limited to approximately $600,000. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the terms you're going to hear in this presentation and some of the jargon. As we go through this slide, remember that the percentages that are shown on this slide are statewide averages. Some operations, you know, return more to the charities. Some operations return less than the average. That doesn't necessarily mean they're out of compliance if they're less than the average. But if you look, here's an average pull tab dollar, and that's, you know, a dollar somebody pays to play a pull tab. That represents the total receipts, or the gross, of that gaming activity. That's 100% of the money taken in is the gross. About 77% of that gross gets paid out in prizes. That's roughly between 77 and 78% is the amount of money that gets paid out in prizes on the average on a pull tab game in the state of Alaska. Unique to pull tabs is a term called ideal net. An ideal net is if every pull tab ticket were sold at face value and every prize was paid out in that series. Because pull tabs are bought in a series where you know the exact ticket count, exactly how much each pull tab ticket is worth, and you know exactly what prizes are going to be paid out in that series. So the ideal net represents the gross, ideal gross figure minus the prizes paid out. Also on pull tabs, you have taxes. And that represents about 1% of the total pull tab dollar. There's a term that is called adjusted gross, and that is your gross minus prizes and taxes. And that is the figure that the minimum percentages are currently calculated on. Operators are required to return 30% of the adjusted gross income to the charities. The charities are required to limit their expenses to 70% of the adjusted gross income, which in essence means they're supposed to retain 30% also of this figure. On the average, 12% of the gross goes to expenses, and those expenses include things like rents, operators' fees, light bills, you know, equipment, whatever.
cost of the pull tab games themselves, cost of bingo paper, etc. That roughly is about 12% of every pull tab dollar. And what's left after you've subtracted prizes, taxes, and expenses is what's called net proceeds. And the net proceeds is the amount that goes to the charity. And net proceeds is essentially the same as the profit of the gaming activity. Once you've subtracted your prizes and your taxes and your expenses, what's left is what goes to the charity. And that represents about 10% of every pull tab dollar. Over on the right, you can see an average bingo dollar, and it's most of the same terms, full dollars to gross. 83% of each dollar goes back in the form of prizes. That gets you to your adjusted gross because there are no taxes on bingo. Then you have about 15% of each dollar is expenses, and 2% it represents the net proceeds that on the average that get returned to the charities. And like I said, keep in mind that those figures are just statewide averages. Some operations return higher percentages, some operations return less, and you know, it doesn't necessarily mean they're out of compliance. And here is the jargon that we just talked about that you're going to see or you're going to hear talked about a lot as through our presentation and through, I'm sure, a lot of the testimony. The gross represents the total dollar amount or value of all the amounts wagered on games and chance and skill, or you know, the total amount of money that players put up to participate. The ideal net represents the, as I explained, if every pull tab in a series were sold at face value and every prize was paid out, what's left is the ideal net. Adjusted gross represents the gross less prizes and taxes, and that's what we use in Alaska to calculate the minimum percentage that goes to the charities. And net proceeds is the profit of the games, which goes to the charities. Let's talk about the basics of the charitable gaming business. Why is government involved in charitable gaming in the first place? I guess, you know, I think back to when I first took over this job and certainly asked myself that several times, but the answer that I think the reason why government is involved in charitable gaming is because charitable gaming is a way to derive public benefit. And our role as the regulators, as the government being involved, is to ensure that the appropriate level of public benefit is being derived from that activity. Public benefit consists of two things. First is the money to the charities. Second is state revenues. How do we go about ensuring the public benefit from charitable gaming here in Alaska? First of all, we'll talk about the money to the charities. At least 30% of the adjusted gross income on operator-owned pull tabs must go to the charities. Charities are essentially held to the same standard, or permittees are essentially held to the same standard by limiting the expenses. And that represents about 10% of the total pull tab dollar. At least 10% of the adjusted gross income on operator-run bingo and all other gaming activities is supposed to be returned to the charities. And the charities are, here again, held to the same standard by limiting their expenses to 90%. And in addition to those two things, all profits above the statutory minimum must go to the charities. They are due the net proceeds of the gaming activity, which might be something more than those minimums. If the expenses are less than the maximum expenses, they may receive more than the minimum net proceeds. How do we derive the tax revenues or the revenues for the government? 3% of the ideal net of every pull tab game is collected by the distributors and remitted to the Department of Revenue as a pull tab tax. We also collect a 1% fee on the net proceeds of activities or of permittees who make more than $20,000 in net proceeds each year. And we collect annual permit and license fees. Let's take a look at how Alaska compares to other states in our per capita gaming expenditures, too. This is comparing how much each Alaskan spends, roughly, each year on pull tabs and bingo. As you can see, Alaska is number one in per capita gaming expenditures on pull tabs and bingo. This is taken from the 1995 National Association of Fundraising Ticket Manufacturers report on charity gaming. And as you can see, per capita bingo expenditures were roughly $88. That means everyone in this room on the average spent $88 playing bingo in Alaska in 1995. Pull tab expenditures on the average were $345. And now that's the amount that they paid to participate. Now, this takes into the $345 also represents if someone has a $10 winner on a pull tab game and they turn around and hand that ticket back and say, I want 10 more tickets, that's another $10 wager. So the $345 represents that figure. And then the total is obviously $433. The next slide is how Alaska compares to other states in deriving public benefit. Now, as we look at this slide, you need to keep in mind that these figures are the return to the charities as percentages of gross. It does not represent the total dollars that were returned to the charities. Many states have very different systems, and many states don't have the size of charitable gaming that we do, and some have substantially more. But there's several different methods for deriving public benefit. But as a percentage of gross, we are returning or deriving a total public benefit of approximately 8.86%. And here again, these are from figures that are taken from the 1995 National Association of Fundraising Ticket Manufacturers 1995 report on charity gaming. Policing expenses in Alaska and elsewhere. Is Alaska's policing expenses program the best approach? Because essentially that's what the type of system that we have in Alaska by limiting it to 30% of the adjusted gross and limiting the expenses to 70%. And by saying the charities are due the profit of the gaming activities, we are put in the position of policing the expenses in order to determine that only to operator-run games. It applies to the charities by limiting their expenses. And the program is focused on policing the books and records of individual gaming operations to assure that the profit goes to the charity and that the expenses are reasonable and necessary. That's our statutory limitation on expenses. They must be reasonable and necessary. And what's the result of this type of system? Well, essentially what happens in many instances is the expenses expand to consume pretty much everything over the minimum amount anyway. It creates very slow-moving and contentious audits of charities and operators because the department is put in the position of making very subjective determinations about whether or not a particular expense is reasonable and necessary to the conduct of that activity. And as a result, fights between the division and the operators and the charities over those subjective judgments occur regularly. Little more than the statutory floors obtained for the charities at considerable cost in money and goodwill what the final outcome is. We spend a substantial amount of resources trying to chase down those expenses, and it's an expensive way to do business. How did some other states and Canadian provinces do it? Some establish a minimum percentage of gross rather than adjusted gross. These governments don't concern themselves with policing expenses to determine profit or reasonableness. They merely look at the gross figure, take a percentage off of that. Either you paid it to the charity or you haven't, and therefore you're in compliance or you're not. And some governments set a higher amount, which must go to the charity. MVP and operator activities, 95 and 96. I'd like to spend just a few minutes talking about and showing you the trend that we see occurring in charitable gaming. And this is a pattern that we've sort of watched develop over the last year or two. A substantial amount of the non-compliance is as a result of the multiple beneficiary permittees, or MBP. And I'll start this off by explaining to you the difference between an MBP and an operator. An operator is an individual who decides they're going to conduct gaming activity, and they're going to do it for profit. And they're going to contract with charities in order to conduct this activity. But first, they have to come to the state. They have to take a test. They have to post a bond of $25,000 to $100,000. They have to obtain a license from us. And they're held to a very strict standard of 30% and 10% of the adjusted gross income, or else the department shall revoke. There's no wiggle room there. This legislature has written the statutes that the department shall revoke the license of an operator who does not meet those minimums. The operator also makes all the capital investment necessary to open a facility and then goes out and contracts with charities to run those games. An MVP, on the other hand, is 2 to 6 charities who get together and decide that they're going to run their own activities for themselves. And it was developed as a mechanism to encourage charities to run their own games. And because it can be expensive to get involved in gaming, the capital startup cost to lease a facility, purchase the supplies, and everything else, and can be expensive. And you're also committing to, oftentimes paying a manager, paying a bookkeeper, paying several employees to run these games for you. And oftentimes it's more than one charity will want to take on. Well, MVPs are supposed to be 2 to 6 charities who get together and run their own games, and they hire a manager oftentimes to do it for them. And as you'll see when we go through this, the MVP is sort of, it is becoming a loophole that people are using to take advantage of avoiding being an operator. They're going out and getting 2 to 6 charities to form an MVP, hire them as a manager, and then when the charities wind up out of compliance, the division's recourse is to revoke the permits of the charities that are involved. And the manager of that MVP need only go out and get 2 to 6 more charities and do that again. So let me walk you through this. This is these charts represent the entire MVP and operator activity for 95 and 96 for the whole state. The first row that you see here is the gross receipts from the gaming activity. That's a figure we've already talked about. Here is the second row, which is the adjusted gross income, which we've talked about. Then you have the allowable expenses. Now that is, if they were holding their expenses to the 70% and 90% expense limitations that are required by statute, this would be what their expenses would be limited to. And that's by multiplying the 70 and 90 by the adjusted gross. Then the next row is the minimum statutory net proceeds, and that is the amount of money that the charity should have gotten if they received the full 30 and 10%.
I skipped actual expenses.
Oh, I'm sorry, I did. I skipped a row, which is the actual expenses that were reported
on their 1995 and 1996 annual financial statement that was filed with the department. Then there's the minimum statutory net proceeds. That's the amount they should have gotten if they would have received the 30 and 10%. Then there's the reported net proceeds, which is what they reported on their annual financial statement, and that's determined by deducting the expenses from the adjusted gross. And then you have the payments to permittees, which is the amount that actually got paid to the charities, which is sometimes very different from net proceeds. And you should note that these figures are compiled from the 1995 and 1996 annual financial statements. They're not audited figures. You know, they don't necessarily balance in all instances. These are the figures that were reported. Yes.
Why don't you tell folks that we do have these as a handout?
Yeah, okay. And we do have these as a handout. If you're trying to take notes or whatever, after the meeting, we'll see that everybody gets a copy. But the other thing you should pay attention to as we go through this is that the figures in it that are in red denote expenses, net proceeds, and payments to permittees that are out of compliance by an amount greater than 1%. There were several instances of noncompliance where it was minuscule, pennies in some instances, and there was no need to make them red. So these are instances where the noncompliance is greater than 1%. As you can see, the first page here is six operators in the Anchorage area. If you look at the first one here, the minimum statutory net proceeds was $12,090. Or $698, and the reported net proceeds was $15,330. That's because their expenses were less than the 70%, and the payments to permittees were $12,779. So in this instance, they actually paid the minimum statutory net proceeds but paid something less than reported net proceeds, and that can occur. And so as you go through this, what you should pay attention to is the comparison of operators and MVPs and the instances of noncompliance. I'll try to point out some of the more egregious cases as we go through here. This is operators in the Anchorage area through number 8 here. It starts MVPs in the Anchorage area. Most of the operators that you see are either in compliance or, like this one's, out of compliance by $700. You look at this MVP here, the minimum statutory net proceeds that the charity should have gotten is $378,000, and the charities received about $298,000. So they're out of compliance by about $80,000. This particular MVP, the net proceeds that should have been paid to the charities is $514,000. They paid about $377,000. And this is the amount of money that the charities are making from this activity. And if you look to compare this operator in 1995 was responsible for these three locations. And so we've done a combined total for these three locations as MVPs so that you can compare them to the operator-run activities. The operator-run activities were all in compliance. This MVP is doing well over the minimum amount. They are supposed to be paying, at a minimum, $421,000 to their charities, and they paid about $668,000. But you look at this MVP, and on a gross of nearly $7 million, $6.9 million, they had an adjusted gross of $986,000. Their expenses should have been limited to $719,000. Their expenses were $982,000. The minimum statutory net proceeds should have been $267,000 to go to the charities. And the charities received just over $11,000 for 1996 on a gross of nearly $7 million. You come down here and look at these locations. In 1995, this operator
represented the same locations that these two MVPs represented or currently represent. And for 1995, this operator was substantially in compliance. And in 1996, these MVP activities, the actual expenses are $579,000, which is about $140,000 more than the limitation that's established in statute. The charity should have received about $188,000, and they got just under $50,000, $49.2 million. In this instance, the charity should have received $316,000, and the charity's got $172,000, underpayment of approximately $145,000 or so. And as you go through here, the trend continues. Here's Fairbanks. These are all operators up here and down to here, substantially in compliance. Here's the first MVP. It's a non-filer for 96, so they didn't conduct activities or are no longer conducting activities, but we don't have their 96 report. This one for 96 was less than the reported net proceeds, but more than the minimum amount that was due. And here's just more examples. Here's another example of an MVP in Juneau, where the minimum statutory net proceeds that the charity should have gotten if they stuck with their expense limitation would be $287,000, and the charity got approximately $64,000. In 96, you'll see here's an operator that was out of compliance. It's now been revoked. Here's more operators, two in Ketchikan, one in North Pole. Here's more operators, Bethel, North Pole, Petersburg. And here, you know, they're substantially in compliance. Here's one in Palmer, Craig, and Valdez. Has an operator who underpaid the charities by about $4,000. And here's a few more examples. Nothing too egregious to point out on these pages. Let's take a look at a few of the task force recommendations. In 1995, Governor Knowles appointed a charitable gaming task force, and this task force reviewed all the statutes and regulations associated with charitable gaming and came up with some recommendations. I've put down three here. The first one is, it was the clear intent of the legislature that operators and MVPs meet the same standards for returns to the permittees. Therefore, the task force unanimously recommends the division take steps to ensure this happens. The second recommendation is, the task force strongly recommends that all requirements for conducting and reporting should be clearly and simply spelled out and enforced. And the third one that I've put in this presentation is, the task force unanimously recommends that immediate steps should be taken to establish a level playing field in the gaming industry where all market participants are required to meet the same minimum net percentages for like activities. And I'll point out here that you know, Tom Williams touched on that the division had a list of things that are not in this bill that we thought were things we'd like to see happen. But this bill does take care of recommendation number one. It establishes the same like percentages for operators and MVPs and holds it to the same standard. The bill does deal with simplifying the accounting and auditing and simplifying the reporting requirements. And it takes steps towards leveling the playing field. And although, you know, we think there's other things that could be done in addition to this and that we maybe would like to see in the future, we definitely support the steps that this bill is taking. Common complaints about the current gaming program. And these are complaints that I've heard frequently over the last couple of years as director of the division. The division must police expenses of permittees and operators. Audits are slow and contentious. Accounting for gaming activities is difficult and financial reports are complex. There's no incentive for efficiency for operators because the charities pay all the expenses. Prohibitive financial interest requirements intrude into the business affairs of those involved in gaming. They definitely require the division to look into personal lives and things of that nature. There's an uneven playing field between operator and self-directed gaming. And oftentimes, the department's only enforcement tool is to suspend or revoke a charity's permit, even though the charity really was not responsible for the instance of noncompliance. What is this legislative proposal? Well, this legislation, what it does, I guess the bigger objective of this legislation is to change the way the public benefits derive from gaming. And how does it do that? It's intended to be a revenue-neutral bill. It simplifies the reporting. And it does this by basing the charity share on a percentage of gross instead of net proceeds. Allows the department to maintain its current oversight with a reduced budget. It helps ensure that charities consistently receive what they should, provides profit incentives for operators, removes the need for prohibitive financial interest sections, provides for revocation of gaming participants who do not meet minimum percent of gross requirements. And I'm also going to add, because in Tom Williams, Senator Sharpe's staffer's presentation, he mentioned that the bill also allows operators to pool. And I guess I'll take a second to explain that because there was a question about that. And what that does is, currently, if I'm an operator in business and I contract with 8 charities to sell pool tabs and run bingo games on their behalf, I'm committing to a pretty substantial amount of accounting work. Because each pull tab game that I buy, I expense to a particular charity. So all of the profits of that game are due to that charity. So I now have to account for every ticket sold for that particular game, and it goes along with that charity. I have to allocate a portion of the expenses associated with the sale of that game to that charity. And I have to do that. If, let's say, I have 30 jars of pull tabs for sale, each one of those jars I have to account for separately for the charity that I'm putting that jar in play for, jar of pull tabs in play for. If I'm running bingo games, each different session is oftentimes conducted on behalf of a different charity. So here again, if I run 15 sessions a week, I have to account for every session separately, and each charity gets the amount that they're due for that particular session. If I have a bad night, the charity might get nothing. If I have a good night, they may get more than the minimum. But that's how it currently works. With the way the bill is set up under pooling, an operator would just account for the total operation, total sales, total expenses, and they would apportion based upon the gross amount that they apportion to a particular organization, and an amount of the expenses that's equal to that size portion. And they would pay net proceeds to the charity, or pay them their charitable share under this proposal accordingly. And it definitely eases the accounting burden and simplifies things. And that's what Tom was referring to earlier when he mentioned pooling. This is not the first percentage of gross proposal that we've seen. I'm sure Representative Martin can testify to that. In the past, there have been some arguments that have been used against some of the bills that we've seen. Here's the arguments, and there's some responses to those. The first argument is that the current 30 and 10 percentages are too high and too difficult to achieve. The percentage of gross is higher, and it won't work because there's not enough profit left for an operator. Well, the response is that this bill is intended to be revenue neutral and provides and preserve the status quo.
I think that you're going to hear testimony that maybe the figure's too high, maybe the figure works, maybe it's too low. You'll hear all kinds of different testimony, but I know that Senator Sharp's intention and the intention of the division is to try and get as close to a revenue neutral bill as possible. Although, granted, you can never get one that's 100% revenue neutral to everybody who conducts gaming activity. Elasticity is the second argument. Increasing the money to the charities and the money to the state forces a decrease in prizes to the players. This will cause people not to play and kill the gaming industry. First of all, charitable gaming is the only form of gaming in Alaska. There's no competition from other types of gaming such as casinos or horse racing or anything else. Alaska is already 5% above the national average for prize payouts, and again, this bill is intended to be a revenue-neutral bill and should not affect the prize payouts. Three, the playing field is not level. It should be, and the proposed bill does not do it. The proposed bill helps to level the playing field by establishing the same requirements for all gaming entities, and it provides for revocation of those who are not in compliance. The fourth argument is that the state should not be using gaming to increase revenues. Again, the bill is intended to be a revenue-neutral proposal and not derive more money for the state. The fifth argument is net proceeds should not be increased because this will put operators out of business and charities will suffer. Again, the bill is intended to be a revenue-neutral proposal. And the last argument is statutory penalties are needed for failure to make or pay minimum net proceeds and for exceeding maximum expense limitations. And the way this bill deals with that is it establishes easily applicable penalties for charities that don't meet the minimum requirements by providing for revocation. And it gives the charities new tools to monitor MVP activities. By requiring monthly reports to the charities from MVPs and operators. And as a charity involved in gaming, if I contract with an operator or an MVP, it would definitely be a lot simpler to monitor our activities if we got a report and it showed the gross, and I can just calculate from that exactly what I'm due by multiplying it by the correct percentage, rather than having to go through the business of looking at the expenses and trying to determine whether or not they're reasonable and necessary and trying to determine whether or not I got the correct percentage of the adjusted gross. In conclusion, this legislative proposal will make needed programmatic changes to simplify oversight of gaming by simplifying the accounting and the audits and making them a percentage of gross. It will allow the department to more efficiently administer the gaming program, and the department strongly supports the bill. And we'd like to thank Senator Sharp for bringing it forward and giving us a chance to talk about it. Be happy to answer any questions from the members of the committee if they have any, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Committee members, questions? Committee members, questions? Senator Pardell.
Dennis, we saw a lot of numbers on the current regime as it impacts charities and the proceeds to charities. How much in dollar amounts does this? How much does the state derive in tax revenues from gaming, approximately?
About $2 million a year. I think the most current year, 1996, it was actually just under $2.2 million, but roughly around $2 million.
And what is the FY98 budget for policing or regulating
gaming
industry?
Through the chair, Senator Parnell, the budget for FY98 has been cut to just over $600,000. I believe $601,000.
Did you remember what the budget was last year? So it was about
$913,000.
So we were spending $913,000 to bring in $2 million, basically.
Yes, Senator, that's correct.
Okay, and then if we make no changes in the statute, what direction is tax revenue going to head? If you can tell, do you think we're going to lose tax revenue because of our inability to police or regulate the industry? And do you think charities will also lose revenue due to our inability? I mean, given the budget that we've got.
Right. Senator Parnell, a substantial portion of that $2.2 million is the 3% tax that's on pull tabs, on the ideal net of a pull tab game. And that's collected by the distributors when they sell them. And there's only a little over 20 distributors. And they remit monthly payments to the state. And we really don't have a problem with distributors misreporting or paying the wrong amount. And the rest of the amount that we collect is the permit and license fees, and that's probably not going to change much either. The only thing that may change slightly would be the net proceeds fee, and that's 1% of the net proceeds, but that only represents about $170,000 of the total $2.1 million, and it's not going to change substantially enough to we'll continue to bring in roughly the same amount, I guess is what I would say.
Whether we pass this legislation or not?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Yes, you're correct. Whether we pass the legislation or not, we'll bring in roughly the same amount.
So I guess
for
I'm asking, why are we doing this? I mean, why do we want to go through the headache if with the amount of people that you could fund for $600,000 is going to bring in the same amount of tax revenue, and I presume is going to give the charities the same level of benefit? I mean, what? I'm missing something here.
I'll take a stab at it. Through the chair, Senator Parnell.
I understand that it'll be easier
right.
for your division, but if
right.
we're not gaining.
Right. Well, the current system that we have to go through to oversee or monitor the activities is just very cumbersome, and it's very slow, contentious system for auditing the permittees and the licensees. And we're seeing an increasing trend of noncompliance, which requires more and more resources to go out and do that. And in light of the recent budget cuts that has increased our staff from 13 to 7, we think that it's necessary to take the steps to simplify the accounting and auditing in order for us to maintain the current level of oversight that we have.
Mr. Chairman, could I add, I don't see this program as basically a tax program. It brings in a little tax revenue, but I think that the state's primary involvement is to protect the interests of the charities and to make sure that the program operates as a charitable operation rather than as gambling for profit. And I think that the bill addresses that aspect of it. The charitable take is not collected by the distributors at the sale of pull tabs the way the state tax largely is. The charitable take is a function of net proceeds, and that's a function of expenses, and the expenses are the heavy auditing.
Well, that's what I was getting at, is if this will enable you to protect the charities more or protect state revenues more, then it may be worth pursuing. But what I was hearing was
the charities won't change, but
you think the charitable revenues would change because of increasing noncompliance?
I think that we see a stronger likelihood of being able to maintain the status quo rather than fighting the trend of increasing noncompliance, yes.
And in other states, just looking at the tax revenue side, is the ratio of spending $600,000 to $2 million, is there a way to compare that to other states? I mean, I recognize we're leaving off the benefit of regulation and the charities off the table and that kind of a calculation, but is there some way to compare our enforcement costs just like you compared our per capita expenditures on the gaming industry?
Yes, Senator, there is a way to do that. I don't have the information in front of me at this time to be able to tell you that or answer that question. I'd certainly be happy to prepare something for you that compares the cost of regulation versus the, you know, amount of activity, roughly. Or
I just really want to know we're going to do something worthwhile if we're going to take up this legislation. Besides simplifying.
I guess my comment would be the state's revenue is so much more a given factor because of where the revenue comes from. It doesn't come basically from the operations. It comes from the wholesale end of it and the licensing, whereas the charities depend on the operators and what's expenses and what the prize level is and everything else, and they're affected tenfold on a dollar loss compared to what the state is, because they, if you use the 21 or 22 million that the charities got compared to 2 or 3 million that the state got, there's a 10 times leverage effect there on anything that's not in compliance. Even more than that, because the state's already got theirs at the wholesale level. The biggest percentage of wholesale level on the vendors. Is that not correct?
Yes, Senator, that's correct.
The people that sell the tabs to the operators.
Yes, Senator, that's correct. The distributors collect the majority.
Now that I've said everything I know about it. Any other questions?
Section 9.
To the draft bill.
On the draft bill, on Section 9, you mentioned a number of times revenue neutral, and the staff at the Williams has done that too, but your chart shows that in pool tabs, currently that the industry is giving very charitable, 10% to the recipients, whereas here it's calling for 7%. And also in your chart, it shows what really disturbs me more than anything else, how little charity get compared to other states.
And we're not discussing that at this point.
Yeah. Right. Well, the main thing here,
we're discussing.
You said 10% now is getting, and this lowers it down to
7%. 7% of the growth. 7% of 300 million is 21 million. What they're getting now is 22 million on adjusted growth. That's awful close to the difference between 10% and 7%.
I thought you were dealing with growth over there too. Average percentage is what you showed.
Through the chair, Representative Martin, I did show the average percentage, but you need to keep in mind that that's an average. I mean, there's currently a thing in this state called a vendor that we really haven't talked much about, and that's bar owners who run games on behalf of charities, and they pay a much higher percentage. They pay 70% of the ideal net of a game to the charities. And there's also several organizations out there that pay more than the minimums, and so the figure, where the actual figure is as far as what is revenue neutral, I think you're going to hear lots of debate about that. And I can only tell you what the average is and tell you what goes into figuring up that average. And, you know, I think that certainly there's going to be a lot of hearings that discuss what the correct percentage is, or a lot of testimony. And I'm certainly not going to say exactly what the correct percentage should be here.
Well, with that in mind, you showed on the charts what's happening in other states and provinces. Why is the department saying you want to remain revenue neutral when we know that's not fair to charities?
Through the chair, Representative Martin, I think that what Senator Sharp is trying to do with this bill is to not deal with changing the charitable gaming pie, the amount of money that goes to the charities or the state or paid out in prizes or to the participants, but merely to deal with changing the system we use to derive those portions of the pie. And that's why Senator Sharp's trying to keep it revenue neutral, and why the division supports this effort.
Only a question that sent to Parnell.
We're going to go to one more question, and then we're going to go to the people we came here to hear from. That's the people. I got 20 people signed up, and even in 5 minutes, that's going to be damn near 2 hours. So okay. Let's move it on.
Pertaining to taxes, you mentioned at the beginning one of the purposes for this whole thing was to raise revenue, And I would disagree with that. I hope you reevaluate your presentation, because we only wanted, I didn't want it all, but those who were promoting this for charity said that you do need a little revenue for the department to oversee and to monitor. It wasn't meant to be a fundraiser for the state, as we've had a lot of criticism on.
Through the chair, Representative Martin, I don't think we're advocating an increase in state revenues, but that is certainly a public benefit that's derived mm-hmm. from the charitable gaming system and one that we're responsible for monitoring.
Okay, at this time, thank the department for our testimony, and we will at least have the advantage of coming back for more information to you, more so than some of the people here that's taken the effort to come. I'd like at this time to go to the first five people that signed up here, and then we'll go to teleconference for a few at each site and come back to here. At this time, I have first signed up with John Lopez. Is he still here? Yes. Obviously, let's try to limit it to no longer than 5 minutes so that everybody will have a chance. Good afternoon. State your name and your affiliation, if any.
Okay, my name is John Lopez. I'm a member in charge for the Alaska Bow Hunters Association. I'm also the operations manager for Alaska Bingo Supply, which is a pull tab distributorship. The reason why I wanted to make comment was that I looked at the percentages, and I looked at 1995's annual report that the gaming put out, and the concern about being revenue neutral that I have when I did some looking at the combined operator and permittee reports, I found that the percentages were actually lower than the percentages that were shown on in this proposal. So certain sections of the bill, I feel the percentages are just too high. They're off by a half a point or a point. Specifically, bingo was up, I think, by about a point above what the average for the whole industry was. And bills are paid, you know, when you run an operation by dollars, not percentages. So percentages can make or break an operation. And I have a question for the department. If they have identified with these percentages, how many permittees would be out of compliance under the current percentages? Because I think that's got to be taken into consideration when you put this bill in. Who is not going to realize any benefit from charitable gaming if this bill goes through? The other thing is I believe there was a fee, I believe 0.1% of the gross receipts. It's an annual fee that we would pay on a gaming activity. That 0.1%, which is Alaska Statute 05-15-020B, wouldn't be revenue neutral either for my organization. That would be an increase of about 58%. So some of these percentages have got to be looked at and see how they actually apply to the dollars. Dennis showed some nice charts on NAFTA, and he showed a percentage there, I believe, which showed Alaska as being, as far as a percentage of gross dollars, I believe it was third from the end on the chart. But there's also another NAFTA chart that shows that Alaska is number one or number two in the nation as far as actual dollars returned per capita per charity in net. So we're talking about percentages and we're talking about dollars. We can make it on percentages. We can make it look at like Alaska is really poor and bad. But if you take a look at the dollars, Alaska did a great job as far as the net return to charities per capita for the NAFTA reports. NAFTA also commented at one time to the state, I've got some correspondence on elasticity of dollar and the percentage of gross concept. Their comments were not to go in that area because it's hard to manage and it's hard to enforce. They also said that the elasticity of dollar, and specifically to do with the state of North Dakota, which at the time I believe didn't have any type of other gambling, they had just charitable gaming. They put a 2 or 2.5% increase on the state tax on the gross receipts in 1993. At the end of the year, the gross receipt activity dropped by 8% because of a 2% increase in taxes on it. And that the net effect was is that there was less money coming back to the charities. My recommendation, I'm very happy that we're meeting today this early before the next session because it gives us a chance to study this. I think that more study and research has got to be given to this before we finally pass this bill. I think the concept is good. I think for enforcement will be good, but I think we need to look at that elasticity of dollar. If we increase the profits and pull tabs, there's dynamics that are involved in a game. They're called playbacks. And when you increase the profitability, you lose that playback factor, which encourages people to spend money on pull tabs. And that'll stop the activity. And that's why we don't want to see the profit margin go up too high, because we have to offset it because of taxes that we have to pay or increase profitability requirements. So those are my comments. I want to thank you for a chance of giving those comments to the committee.
I appreciate your input, and as we will have other hearings as we move down through the consideration of this legislation. I thank you for participating. Next, I have Joe Nyquist. Good afternoon, Joe.
I'm Joe Nyquist. I'm an operator. Been an operator in Fairbanks and Anchorage. I'm actually on the first operator license ever issued in Alaska. And so I've seen many changes in the paperwork and the regulations, and we've gone back and forth for different ideas all the way through it. But I think actually the whole concept is a good idea. I think it put everybody in a level playing field, which I think is important. But the percentages, as far as my operation, I have no problem with the pull tab percentages. I don't know about everybody else's because I can't monitor theirs. The bingo, I think, is, you know, needs to be looked at, because I think bingo is a whole different game. But basically, you know, the whole concept to me is, you know, my operation would simplify it. I've spent probably $100,000 on computer programs and computer consultants and programming computer to come up with a system to do the system that we have now, which has made it fairly simple for me now. But it either, you know, do something that's simpler, or don't do anything at all. But, you know, I still say that, you know, everybody should be on a level playing field. So basically, I have you know, I like the idea of, you know, simplifying it. I think it's a pretty good idea that's been put into it. So, but I don't, like I say, I don't know the percentages are right for everybody. But I do know, like, the pull tab percentage, I pay over that percentage back on my gross. So I don't have any problems. I couldn't have if I'm paying more than that anyway.
So you mentioned bingo's a whole ball game.
Well,
so you think it's close or a little high, or?
I think it's probably a little high on the bingo. I don't think that the return on the bingo is. I think there's a real unfair advantage in the bingo business between the MVPs and charities run their businesses, and especially ones that are given buildings or donated, and then because the price of the paper and that, they can, you know, door prizes, they can run theirs, and their return to their, if they're returning to themselves, they can come in and run somebody out of business that has to return to the charity that you're working for. So basically, it's pretty hard to do that where, you know, the higher percentage on the gross there. So I think I have a limited experience in the bingo business, and I'm not saying it was a good experience, but it was an experience, but I'm going to probably be experiencing again here for long. And, you know, I couldn't really tell you, but I don't know if that's too high, but I think it probably, you might be a little high on that. But, that's about all. But I, you know, and I appreciate, you know, your input and everybody's input on it. So,
thank you.
Okay.
Next, I have Ramsey.
Randy.
Kelp. Randy Kelch.
Good afternoon. My name is Randy Kelch. I'm also an operator from Fairbanks. And I'd like to start off by saying I understand, Mr. Martin, you are retiring after next year.
I'm what?
Retiring after next year.
You seem happy.
I was going to say that I'm going to miss you.
Well, I'll give you a compliment. I've noticed that the Fairbanks operators and MPP seem to be much more charitable than the Anchorage operators.
Quit trying to make friends.
I've reviewed the proposed legislation briefly. I think the concept I like best about any possible changes is the enforcement of the rules, the possible enforcement of the rules. We can draft any type of ruling and legislature we want, but if we don't enforce it, of course, we have a kind of rule book, and if we were all, playing by the numbers on that rule book, we may not be required to have this meeting right now. So the important thing to me is whatever is drafted, and the enforcement of those rules would be, the thing that I would be most concerned about. And the averages, the percentages, they appear reasonable, but the problem is if you set the percentages like you are now, if the gaming evolves, you are set with those percentages rather than a percentage of a number. In other words, the percentage of ideal gross. Well, the ideal gross may change, but the percentage of the ideal gross won't change. But the 7%, the percentages of the ideal gross may fluctuate, and that may have an impact. So I don't have an answer, but I just have that as the only thing. As it